Mimi Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Our warfighters are leveraging a variety of advanced AI tools. These systems help us sift through vast amounts of data in seconds so our leaders can cut through the noise and make smarter decisions faster than the enemy can react.
As the U.S. and Israeli war in Iran enters its 19th day, we look at how the U.S. is using artificial intelligence to identify and prioritize targets using a system created by Palantir. This possibly includes the strike on the Iranian girls' school that killed over 170, mostly girls. It comes amidst a legal battle between the Pentagon and the AI firm Anthropic, which is opposes its models being used for mass surveillance of Americans and fully autonomous weapons. We'll get the latest. Then the highest Trump administration official yet, the director of the National Counterterrorism Center, has resigned over the war in Iran, magnifying a rift within the MAGA movement over the war. Plus, we look at the Trump administration's escalating attacks on the media. President Trump says some news outlets should be charged with treason. Treason is punishable by death. FCC Chair Brendan Carr is threatening to revoke the licenses of broadcasters, and Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth's pushing for Trump allies to take over more of the media.
CNN doesn't think we thought of that. It's a fundamentally unserious report. The sooner David Ellison takes over that network, the better.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel says it's killed Iran's intelligence minister, Ismail Khatib, in a strike overnight in Tehran. It's the latest assassination of Iran's senior leadership. This comes as Iran is set to hold funerals today for its security chief, Ali Larijani, and Basij commander, Gholam Reza Soleimani, both of whom were also killed in an Israeli strike on Tuesday. Iran vowed revenge and launched retaliatory strikes against Israel. Two people were killed near Tel Aviv by an Iranian missile strike, Israeli emergency responders said earlier today. On Tuesday, the U.S. dropped 5,000-pound bunker buster bombs along Iran's coast near the Strait of Hormuz to target Iran's anti-ship cruise missiles. It comes as Joe Kent, the director of the U.S. National Counterterrorism Center, resigned Tuesday over the U.S.-Israeli war on Iran. In a letter to President Trump posted on X, Kent wrote, quote, "Iran posed no imminent threat to our nation, and it's clear that we started this war due to pressure from Israel and its powerful American lobby," unquote. Kent is the first senior official to openly break with the White House over the war on Iran. He's a longtime Trump supporter who unsuccessfully ran for Congress twice. During his 2022 election bid, Kent hired a member of the far-right Proud Boys as a consultant. Meanwhile, top intelligence officials are expected to testify before the Senate Intelligence Committee later today. It comes as senior Israeli officials have told U.S. diplomats Iranian protesters will, quote, get slaughtered, unquote, if they demonstrate against their government, even as Israel has been promoting anti-regime protests. That's according to a State Department cable reviewed by The Washington Post. Iran's Ministry of Health says at least 1,444 people have been killed and nearly 19,000 injured in U.S.-Israeli attacks on Iran since February 28th. This is a worker with the Iranian Red Crescent.
جنگ تحمیلی اسرائیل و آمریکا.
During the operations of the imposed war from the U.S. and Israel against my country, the Islamic State of Iran, we have seen many heartbreaking scenes. Unfortunately, we have witnessed killing and injuring many of our civilian citizens that happened during the attacks to residential places at night or during other times and created tragic scenes.
Iran continues to launch retaliatory strikes against its neighbors in the region. In Iraq, Iranian rocket attacks have targeted the U.S. embassy in Baghdad, and a drone sparked a fire at a luxury hotel in Baghdad's heavily fortified green zone. In the UAE, an Iranian projectile landed near a military base that hosts Australian troops. Several Gulf nations, including Kuwait, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates said they're continuing to intercept Iranian missiles and drones. On Monday, Iran launched almost 100 drones at Saudi Arabia, according to the Saudi Defense Ministry. Israel launched airstrikes on central Beirut earlier today, demolishing a residential high-rise building. The Israeli military issued an evacuation warning for the building in central Beirut, saying it was a facility used by Hezbollah. Meanwhile, in southern Lebanon, Israeli troops have been conducting ground operations, ordering the evacuation of several villages. According to the Lebanese Public Health Ministry, at least 912 people, including 111 children, have been killed, and 2,221 people have been wounded in Lebanon's assault on Israel's assault on Lebanon. The Norwegian Refugee Council said 1 million people, about a sixth of Lebanon's population, have been displaced. This is Thamin Al-Khitan, a spokesperson for the UN Commissioner for Human Rights.
In many instances, Israeli airstrikes have destroyed entire residential buildings in dense urban environments with multiple members of the same family, including women and children, often killed together. Such attacks raise concerns under international humanitarian law.
Iran's parliament speaker, Mohammad Bagher Ghalibaf, issued a stark warning about the Strait of Hormuz, saying in a post on X that the strait, quote, won't return to its pre-war status, unquote. This comes as President Trump blasted NATO members as they informed the U.S. they will not get involved in Trump's coalition to reopen the strait. In a post on X, President Trump wrote, quote, I'm not surprised by their action. However, because I always considered NATO, where we spend hundreds of billions of dollars per year protecting these same countries, to be a one-way street. We'll protect them, but they will do nothing for us, in particular in a time of need, Trump said. This is French President Emmanuel Macron.
Nous ne sommes pas partie prenante au conflit. Et donc, jamais la France...
We are not party to the conflict, and therefore France will never take part in operations to open or liberate the Strait of Hormuz in the current context.
Gas prices in the U.S. continue to increase as Iran has effectively blocked the Strait of Hormuz, which sees the passage of about 20% of the world's oil supply. According to AAA, the national average price for gas reached $3.84 a gallon Wednesday, rising 5 cents a day. Overall, gas prices have jumped 29% since the war began. This comes as the UN warns 45 million people around the world are at risk of acute hunger due to rising food prices sparked by the U.S.-Israeli war in Iran. Here in the United States, Attorney General Pam Bondi and her deputy, Todd Blanche, are set to testify before the House Oversight Committee on the Justice Department's handling of the Epstein files later today. Committee Chair James Comer subpoenaed Bondi yesterday, writing in a letter, quote, As Attorney General, you are directly responsible for overseeing the department's collection, review, and determinations regarding the release of files pursuant to the Epstein Files Transparency Act, and the committee therefore believes that you possess valuable insight into these efforts, Comer wrote. Meanwhile, a New York Times review of thousands of pages of Justice Department documents found the late convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein spent heavily on a rotating team of search engine optimization experts, self-described hackers, and content writers to reshape how Epstein appeared on Google and Wikipedia after his 2008 sex crimes conviction. Senate Democrats late Tuesday sent the White House a new counteroffer to fund the Department of Homeland Security, which has been under a partial shutdown for more than a month. The Trump administration has so far ignored demands from Democrats, such as requiring officers to obtain a judicial warrant to enter private homes and to address the excessive use of force by immigration agents. Earlier Tuesday, the administration signaled it's open to enforcing, quote, the use of visible officer identification, though Trump officials have not conceded to prohibiting officers from wearing face coverings. This comes as Trump's Homeland Security Secretary nominee, Republican Senator Mark Wayne Mullen, is set to appear before a Senate committee today as his confirmation process begins. Trump appointed Mullen to replace Christine Noem, who was fired from the position as head of Department of Homeland Security earlier this month. Several immigrants from El Salvador who were deported by the Trump administration last year have been disappeared and subjected to arbitrary detention in their home country. That's according to a new report by Human Rights Watch, which said at least 11 deported Salvadorans have languished in detention for months since being deported from the United States to El Salvador. They have not been allowed to communicate with their families or provided due process. Some of them were deported last March, along with dozens of Venezuelans, and sent to the troubled Secat mega prison in El Salvador, where there are mounting reports of torture, including sexual violence. A federal judge has temporarily blocked the Trump administration from terminating temporary protected status, that's TPS, for immigrants from Somalia. The judge's emergency order came as the relief was slated to end yesterday. The Council on American Islamic Relations, CARE's Minnesota chapter, said in a statement, quote, "This decision brings a critical moment of relief for Somali families across Minnesota and the country who've been living under the weight of uncertainty," unquote. Minnesota is home to one of the largest Somali populations in the United States. The Trump administration's considering withholding HIV treatment, tuberculosis, and malaria medications from Zambia in order to force the country to open its mines to U.S. companies. That's according to a leaked State Department memo obtained by the New York Times. The memo says, quote, "We will only secure our priorities by demonstrating willingness to publicly take support away from Zambia on a massive scale," unquote. The proposed deal would offer Zambia $1 billion in health funding over 5 years, which is less than half of what the country received before President Trump took office. In return, Zambia would need to grant U.S. companies access to its copper, cobalt, and lithium reserves, and agree to restructure a nearly $500 million agricultural grant to require regulatory changes in its mining sector. About 1.3 million people in Zambia rely on daily HIV treatment provided through U.S. aid programs. Cuba's restored power after a 29-hour island-wide blackout left millions of people without electricity. Cuban energy officials said they'd reconnected the national power grid that had completely collapsed Monday. But blackouts are expected to continue. A U.S. energy blockade has cut off Cuba from accessing desperately needed fuel as the Trump administration intensifies its pressure to topple the Cuban government. The Justice Department's dismissed charges against an Army veteran who set a U.S. flag on fire across the street from the White House last year. The protest held by John J. Kerry came in response to a Trump executive order that mandated federal agencies to vigorously prosecute anyone who burns the U.S. flag. Kerry was not charged with flag burning, but faced two misdemeanors, including for igniting a fire in an undesignated area. A 1989 Supreme Court ruling determined the burning of a U.S. flag is protected speech under the First Amendment. A federal judge in Rhode Island ordered the Trump administration to restore a union contract with 320,000 Veterans Affairs Department workers. This comes after Doug Collins, the VA secretary, canceled the union agreement back in August. U.S. District Judge Melissa DeBose agreed with the American Federation of Government Employees that the VA canceled its bargaining agreement as retaliation for the union's opposition to the Trump administration's labor policies. Everett Kelly, the president of the American Federation of Government Employees, said the ruling, quote, holds this administration accountable and makes clear no one can retaliate against workers for standing up for their rights, unquote. And in Illinois, Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton won Tuesday's Democratic Senate primary in a race to succeed Senator Dick Durbin, who's retiring. Al Jazeera and The Intercept reported dozens of donor groups aligned with the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, known as AIPAC, gave money to Stratton's campaign. If elected in November, Stratton could become the sixth black woman to serve in the Senate in U.S. history. Meanwhile, Evanston Mayor Daniel Biss won the Democratic primary in a closely watched race for a U.S. House seat that's not been vacant for nearly three decades. More than a dozen Democrats ran to succeed the retiring Congressmember John Schakowsky, who's been in office since 1999. Progressive candidate Kat Ubagazala finished second. Groups linked to AIPAC spent millions of dollars attacking both her and Biss. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As the U.S. and Israeli war extends into its 19th day, we turn now to look at how the U.S. is using artificial intelligence to identify and prioritize targets. The system, known as Project Maven, was created by Palantir, and it incorporates the AI model Claude, built by Anthropic. The Pentagon's investigating if the AI system played a role in the U.S. strike on the Iranian girls' school that killed over 170 people, mostly girls. This is CENTCOM Commander Admiral Brad Cooper talking about the use of AI in Iran.
Our warfighters are leveraging a variety of advanced AI tools. These systems help us sift through vast amounts of data in seconds so our leaders can cut through the noise and make smarter decisions faster than the enemy can react. Humans will always make final decisions on what to shoot and what not to shoot and when to shoot, but advanced AI tools can turn processes that used to take hours and sometimes even days into seconds.
Israel's used similar AI targeting programs in Iran as well as in Gaza and Lebanon. The Pentagon also reportedly used the AI tools during the recent military attack on Venezuela when U.S. Special Forces abducted the Venezuelan president Nicolas Maduro and his wife Celia Flores. This comes as a major rift has emerged between Anthropic and the Pentagon, after Anthropic moved to restrict the use of its technology for mass surveillance of Americans and for fully autonomous weapons. In late February, President Trump ordered federal agencies to stop using Anthropic products. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth declared the firm a supply chain risk, effectively cutting it off from government contracts and related work. It marked the first time the Pentagon's designated a U.S. company as a supply chain risk, prompting Anthropic to sue. On Tuesday, CNN reported that nearly 150 retired federal and state judges have filed an amicus brief supporting Anthropic in its lawsuit against the Trump administration. We're joined now by Craig Jones, senior lecturer in political geography at Newcastle University, author of The War Lawyers, The United States, Israel, and Juridical Warfare. He's the co-author of a new article in The Conversation headlined, Iran War Shows How AI Speeds Up Military Kill Chains. Why don't we start there, Professor Jones?
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, the U.S. military, the Israeli military, as your headlines have said, using AI, the kill chain is a bureaucratic mechanism whereby militaries go from trying to designate targets to identify enemies and military targets to the process of actually killing them. They're in the process across the 20th century, early 21st century of speeding that process up. Military drones have helped greatly with that. And the latest front of that is AI. As Bradley Cooper talked about, you're reducing a massive human workload of tens of thousands of hours into seconds and minutes. You're reducing workflows and you're automating human-made targeting decisions in ways in which I think, you know, open up all kinds of problematic legal, ethical, and political questions.
The U.S.-Israel war in Iran is being described as the first AI war. Explain what that means, Craig.
Yeah, I would say it's not quite the first AI war. As you mentioned, Israel has used AI in Gaza. I think this was the first major use of AI in warfare. I think actually the history goes back a little longer with computer programs, with partially enabled with AI have been used in the background of military systems for several years now. It was used in a major way in Gaza in the first few months, where we saw tens of thousands of targets put in a target bank opted by military intelligence, up to 35,000 suspected Hamas combatants found themselves on this list as Israel worked through that to assassinate them, as well as tens of thousands of targets that are ultimately part of the civilian infrastructure. As you said, the U.S. has used it with Maduro, and now Israel and the U.S. are also using these systems in Iran. The key innovation here is twofold. It is the use of AI for intelligence analysis. Intelligence, military intelligence, is multi-format. There is so much of it. It hoovers up what they call signals intelligence, so mobile phones, internet traffic, SMS, mobile phone tracking, all kinds of things. And the AI systems are being used to spot what militaries call patterns of life. You know, who meets with who talks with who, what are the nature of the messages, how are they interacting in ways which are deemed suspicious. And the AI systems look for those patterns and make recommendations, which is the second innovation, for targets. They nominate targets to this bank of targets, which then has, which we can talk about, some technical human oversight. And that's problematic, I think. It's problematic because that's a really persuasive technology. It's nominating hundreds, thousands of targets, potentially a day, and it's working at speeds which are just beyond, you know, the evolution of human cognition in, again, ways that are problematic.
Can you explain, I mean, this is being investigated by everyone, including the U.S. government and the Pentagon, how Palantir was used, it's believed, in the first strikes, the first day of the U.S.-Israeli war on Iran, may have been involved in the targeting of a girls' school in southern Iran, using the tools of Palantir and Claude, which is a property of Anthropic.
Yeah, so this strike on the girls' school is at the moment the leading kind of civilian casualty incident in which around, as you've said, 170 mainly girls were killed, innocent civilians. At the start, we should remember that some of the history of this, it was denied by the U.S. military. Trump insinuated at one point that it was an Iranian missile. It was later verified that it was indeed a U.S. series of Tomahawk missiles that struck this area. And a U.S. preliminary investigation has now found and confirmed indeed what many people thought, which was that U.S. is responsible. It looks, we're not yet clear the role of AI in that particular strike. Whether that becomes clear in the coming days and weeks, we'll have to see. What we do know is that the Claude and Anthropic model via Palantir have been extensively used to do several things, including the intelligence analysis. So we can deduce that that AI system is not yet capable of detecting or is at least, open to making system-wide errors. It did not identify the school as a school in an extremely problematic way in which, you know, within a couple of days, organizations such as the New York Times are able to verify via satellite imagery that there is a wall that's been put up around 13 years ago between the school and an IRGC compound that was nearby. If you'd have been watching drone footage from above, as militaries have the capability of do, just for, you know, half an hour before or a few hours before, you would have seen, you know, that morning, 170 girls dropped off by their parents. And that would have been identified as a non-military target with clearly civilian usage.
But let's get, so we let's, don't yet... let's drill down into this, because, yes, there was a this military facility right next to it. As you described, years ago, a wall was built between the two. So you've got the school very clearly identified. But how does AI work where you have this old, what, 10-year-old, perhaps, information about it being a military base that's fed in, and then it is never updated? Where do human beings come into this?
Yeah, this is a really important question where it gets tricky, but we know a lot already. So it looks like it's just an intelligence failure that an area marked on a map, this is, you know, the whole entire area has been marked as a military compound. There is obligations, legal obligations and ethical obligations and just political obligations within defense intelligence agencies to check this. So what happens is some of these targets are nominated from U.S. military bases back in the United States. Some of those people I've worked with over the last several years on what they call target nomination, what it looks like. They hand that over to CENTCOM, who I know you cover, and they have bases in the Middle East. There's a central one based in Qatar where these targeting decisions are executed. There is an obligation for CENTCOM to check and double check that intelligence, that it's up to date, that everything's kosher on the target. It's clear that that was not done. Whether that was, you know, there should be a human oversight of that, even if it's AI, recommended, or even if it's human recommended, there should be some human intelligence checking. It looks like, for whatever reason, and we don't yet know why. So what happens also is a really interesting technicality is everything in a society that the US military is targeting de facto is labeled on a no strike list because everything is assumed to be civilian. And in order to strike it, you need to get it off the no strike list to be able to target it. So the question here is, why was this school taken off a no strike list, deemed a legitimate military target? It looks like a combination of AI and human intelligence failure to produce something truly.
Talk about how Palantir interacts with Claude, which is owned by Anthropic, especially for the Luddites who are listening all over, for people don't quite understand how this all works.
So, yeah, from what we know, you know, Palantir is a system, much like a deep software system that, you know, like a video game that has all kinds of inputs that you can look at targets. You have all kind of variables like, you know, what size missile should we drop? What is the compound that we're looking at? What's it made out of? All these these variables with intelligence overlays. And then in the same way that software works on a computer, is the Claude is that thing which is in the background, which is kind of, you know, doing the processing of that data, making those recommendations. And then it provides the human some parameters that the human or operator or targeteer can then kind of play with. Obviously, it's highly sensitive and secretive and beyond the very few people using it. The designers, even with Anthropic, would be a very small amount of people who have the intelligence clearance and who've seen this stuff working with sensitive military data. We know from some of the things they've released, like the demos that they've released, we can see some of what that looks like. And one of the most worrying developments that I've seen from what's publicly available is the lack of attention and ability to track civilian casualties within those programs. That's something which we've seen, you know, this war on lawyers and war on civilian casualty harm, you know, that the administrations have built for several years in the U.S. Department of Defense has been eroded by the Trump administration. And you actually see that now programmed into the software.
This is Palantir CEO Alex Karp interviewed on CNBC last week.
These technologies are dangerous societally. The only justification you could possibly have would be that if we don't do it, our adversaries and will do it, and we will be subject to their rule of law. So you, if you decouple this from the support of the military, you're going to have an enormous problem explaining to the American people why is it that we're absorbing the risk of disrupting the very fabric of our society, including the most powerful parts of our society,